Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
This is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
Thaddeus McCotter, American Greatness, joins me as my colleague and co-host and friend, and we're very pleased to welcome Malcolm Hoenlein of the Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, with fresh information about the Middle East. These last hours, the story of Gaza has taken not a backseat, but no longer the priority, given the threat to the election process in Butler, Pennsylvania. However, the story continues with a visit to Washington. Thaddeus, you have a question for Malcolm.
Yes, Malcolm, what can you tell us regarding the ambitious schedule of the Prime Minister when he visits Washington? He's going to see the White House and address Congress. Anything else?
Actually, his visit will be somewhat truncated. For one, there's a fast day in the middle of a Jewish fast day in the middle of his visit. So I think he will be limited in his public activities. But he's scheduled to arrive on July 22nd, and there will be a meeting with the president that day. He will give his speech to Congress on the 24th and then leave. He will probably have some meetings with congressional leaders during that time. Perhaps with the Jewish leaders, if there is time. So the meeting is scheduled to take place in the White House, which has been a matter of speculation. And the president and Bibi last met after October 7th, when the president visited Israel after that horrendous day. And Netanyahu had visited the White House just a short while before that. But since then, as you know, the relationship has gone through some tense stages. There have been reports of holding up weapons, allegations by the prime minister. The announcement was made now that they're sending the 500-pound bombs, but not the 2,000-pound bombs. And there are still reports of limitations being placed by the administration, holding up shipments for months, shipments that are needed, if it's for no other reason than as a deterrent to Hezbollah, which must know that the Israel stockpiles are wearing down. And the United States removed a lot of the stockpiled material and sent it to the Ukraine over the last year and did not replace it. So the discussions between the president and the prime minister are going to be very important. I think they will deal also with the negotiations and with a lot of the issues that have come up publicly but can be resolved privately.
Let's talk about the negotiations, Malcolm. They're endless and yet completely non-transparent. The negotiation includes hostages, includes a ceasefire, includes demands by Hamas that I've read over these weeks are unacceptable and purposely meant to be non-negotiated. It can't be negotiated, like the war must end forever and the IDF must leave Gaza and things like that. Has that changed in any direction, or is Hamas continuing to be deliberately provocative?
They are being provocative, such as issuing a statement 2 days ago that they were pulling out of the negotiations. Then later that same day, another official said, no, it's not true. We never said we're pulling out of the negotiations. They are under tremendous pressure. Israel's success in recent weeks in eliminating terrorists in pinpoint confrontations, as the one that was highlighted this weekend, have been very successful. They've killed hundreds of the terrorists who participated on October 7th and their supporters, and they're feeling the pressure. So and especially the pressure from within Gaza, from the people who are blaming Hamas for all of the deaths and because they brought it on them. And I think that the support outside is somewhat diminished. So Hamas is looking at this situation, trying, and I'm sure Sinwar is trying to protect himself, and so are some of the other leaders, in the hope that a ceasefire would at least get them out of the country, if not being able to remain in hiding. And one of the things that they're willing to do is to give up control of the government. They don't want it. They want to operate like Hezbollah without responsibility, ostensibly, for the governance of Gaza. Happy to have the international community come in, pay the bills, take care of responsibilities, while they will continue to operate as an army in control and will exercise that, and no matter who is in charge of Gaza afterwards. So they've already talked about the second phase, neither Israel nor Hamas being in control of Gaza, but I don't see Israel pulling out of the Philadelphia route. They've certainly lost confidence in Egypt's ability to stop the tunnels, that these huge tunnels that went under the border into Egypt and smuggled the weapons and trucks and other things that came in huge quantities. Egypt has said that they will work with Israel to build a barrier, an underground barrier to prevent tunnels. And I'm sure Israel will welcome that. But they're going to want a system that is not going to allow the Philadelphia route to become a smuggling route again. And I think we'll insist on some presence there.
What about the aid, Malcolm? The aid into Gaza. You tell me there are 1,000 trucks. Why aren't they being unloaded?
Because the system doesn't work. So they blame Israel for the fact that there isn't sufficient aid, which is a complete untruth. And more information comes out showing that Israel has provided sufficient humanitarian aid for the people. There are 1,150 truckloads of humanitarian aid waiting to be collected on the Palestinian side of the Keren Shalom crossing, and they have not been collected. And as you know, these trucks, when they cross in, Hamas steals the stuff. So do armed groups. They see people lined up with sticks, and they beat the drivers and steal the stuff. So it's very hard for them to get truck drivers. There's another 50 truckloads of aid waiting to collection on the Palestinian side of the Erez crossing in northern Gaza. So the UN says that they are managing to pick it up and are doing so at great cost because they are either being looted or attacked by criminal elements on the Palestinian side, but some aid is getting through, but very little. So the way you deal with that is you blame Israel for the fact that the food sufficient supplies are lower. While they are sufficient still, and nobody is dying of famine, the real blame lies with the fact that the UN doesn't have a system to provide and get the food to the people.
What about the pier, Malcolm, that the U.S. built? Where is it?
The pier is on crutches, but they want to have one more load come there, I think, through the offload on the pier, so they can at least say that they did something with it. Until now, I don't think any aid that came through the pier, which has been consistently dismantled, it can't withstand rough waters, broke apart, was taken to Ashdod to repair it, brought back and forth. Now and thereafter, it will be dismantled and removed permanently.
That is, you have a question.
Yes, Malcolm, the new Iranian president is just a representation, reaffirming the terrorist regime's commitment to its proxies, its commitment to subverting United States students, and yet the DNI has issued no report. What's going on?
Well, I think that's a pretty good summary of what's going on, actually. This new president, quote, a reformer, unquote, but clearly not, approved by the supreme leader, who has come out now in support of the, quote, resistance movements, and that they will continue their past practices of support for all the people against Israel to root out Israel, but also against the other neighbors in the region. And for many of the Iranians who are suffering, his words are very bitter pills. He campaigned, as I said, as a reformist, but there's nothing to indicate that that will actually be transferred, except in they said maybe in regard to the women's clothing. And yet today, the Iranian police raided the Turkish Air ticket counter and offices because the women refused to wear the hijab, and they closed it down. So much for the reforms in that regard. What we are seeing is that regarding the students, that this is something the department, the director of national intelligence, Averill Haines, came out with a report, which is one of several that we've seen about the extensive manipulation of the American students and these demonstrations by Iran, having provided funding and support for them, training, we believe, also by the Palestinian Front for Liberation of Palestine, brought in to train. They observed that actors tied to the Iran government, posing as student activists online, are encouraging the protests and even providing financial assistance to participants. and suggesting the connection between U.S.-based demonstration and Iran regime are even deeper than were previously suspected. We have seen the evidence of this for a while. We know that Qatar provided funding. We know others as well. But Iran is using these students and criminal elements tied to these demonstrations as proxies for their efforts to undermine the United States, to undermine the relationship between the United States and Israel. They called it, Khamenei himself called it, a new branch of the resistance front. Now, we know what the resistance front means, and the other members are Hamas, Hezbollah, Palestinian Islamic Jihad. So this is a pretty serious development. And even the official newspaper of the regime, Kayan, which is a mouthpiece for Khamenei, ran an article saying the protest movement and his and describing Khamenei's inspiration and guardianship over it. And they said that's what it's called, exporting the Islamic revolution. So be well for America, for our law enforcement and others to take a closer look, and we can find out what's really behind these demonstrations and how sometimes well-meaning students, but mostly ignorant students and sometimes just radicalized, are being used for demonstrations, and much more radical stuff is being planned, especially for the Democratic Convention and for the opening of the colleges in the fall.
Thaddeus, you have more questions.
Malcolm, there are two other developments in Syria and Jordan as well. What can you tell us about those?
So in regard to Jordan, it's an interesting development that there was a sort of quiet announcement that a new NATO headquarters was being set up in Amman. Now, this is an interesting development given Russia's opposition and that of their some of the countries which they're allied. It's a sort of thumb in the eye for some of the elements, but most of all, it's a source of protection for the for Jordan. Having a NATO headquarters, it certainly will be resistant to Iran's aspirations, which is to take over and have direct access to Israel's border. The Syrian story, which unfortunately gets no attention, is that they are going today to vote. This is the fourth vote since the big protest began in 2011. They are only in the areas under control of the government, not the ones behind the U.S.-backed Kurdish Syrian Democratic Forces areas and not in the rebel-held areas. And diaspora Syrians who are allowed to vote in presidential elections, and because of the large numbers since the civil war and the large emigration of many Syrians, they're not qualified to vote. So there are 1,500 government-approved candidates running for office. The poll is taking place while the Syrian economy is collapsing and dwindling aid because people are just getting tired, donor fatigue of the kleptocracy. The currency against the dollar has reached an all-time low. And in Druze areas, for instance, they're campaigning not to vote in these elections as a protest against the government. And the you know, people are saying they hope bringing in new legislators because the number that are voting who are running who were in office before is very low. So they're saying they hope a new government, new members will come with new views. But obviously the results are controlled by the Syrian government. But it could be a test for Assad. And if the right election take results, he can then find himself running for another term. And the elections are essentially finished because it's only the primaries that matter. Once they get elected, we know already the outcome that the government will have 169 seats, the opposition 60 some seats, and allied parties 39 seats. So the election itself isn't as significant, but the outcome in terms of how it will impact Assad's future is.
Quickly, Malcolm, we just have a minute. Amia, the bombing in July 18th, 1994, against the Jewish Center in Buenos Aires and against the Israeli embassy. People are gathering in Buenos Aires now to remember. To what end? What should we look for, Malcolm? We have about a minute.
Well, we're looking at what the new president's participation will be and whether there will be renewed interest. He has certainly indicated that. The Iranian papers are writing about it and talking about how the bombing of the Argentine Zionist Association, when that was not the case, it was the Jewish community headquarters. They are talking about the singling out of Iran, trying to defend their position. But the demonstrations, I think the people coming together will renew interest. And there still has not been any resolution to the murder of Nisman, the prosecutor, other elements that we have covered over the years. And they say that while Iran is expanding its relationships and creating, as they word, regional power in South America, they an important global power, they're saying Argentina is isolating itself from the benefits that they can derive, whereas all these other countries know that the dependency they build in Iran is only to take away their resources and benefit Iran, not the countries.
Malcolm Holein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. Thaddeus McCotter, American Greatness. Next up, The Dusty One. I'm John Batchelor.